This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Kidnappers, a community access media station. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.
Hello and welcome to Landwise Promoting Sustainable Crop Production, a podcast series about sustainable ways to grow food in New Zealand. I'm Georgia O'Brien, Extension Coordinator for Landwise, based in Hastings. Landwise has been around since 1999, helping farmers and growers to develop and test new practices through on-farm trials and extending cutting-edge research to the farm or orchard gate. Through our podcast series, we are bringing the insights of lead researchers, technologists, and farmers to listeners from all over the ag and hort industry. Each month has a theme, with guests joining us weekly for discussions. At the end of the month, we'll have them back as a panel to talk together and respond to your queries. This month, we're looking at managing herbicide resistance, brought to you by our platinum sponsors BASF, Hawke's Bay Regional Council, Vegetables New Zealand, and Processed Vegetables New Zealand. I'm excited to be joined today by Chris Buddenhagen from Ag Research to talk about the herbicide resistance research he's been working on to help understand how best to assess the risk of herbicide resistance in arable weeds, as well as where and how much resistance we already have in New Zealand. Thanks for joining me, Chris.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Cool. So, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe this work is New Zealand's first herbicide resistance survey. So why haven't we been doing one before now?
Well, this initiative is largely possible because of our collaboration with Foundation for Arable Research, which has made it a priority, and we have obtained funding from MBIE. So the money helps, and the collaboration helped us get that funding. It's hard to say for sure why it hasn't happened before. It's possible that we viewed it as a relatively minor problem in New Zealand, and it just hasn't bubbled to the top. The apparent rarity of resistance was thought to be related to the fact that we use a lot of crop rotations in our arable crops, and crop rotations can allow you to use different chemistries on the weeds, and that's thought to mitigate risk. The other thing is that weed control is largely viewed as a farm enterprise issue. The farmer has a problem, they deal with it. It's not really bubbling up to be viewed as a kind of bigger problem that more people need to be involved in. Contractors, farmers, and herbicide companies deal with their issues on a case-by-case basis. There was ad hoc involvement with the small number of weed scientists in New Zealand. So previous cases, one or two every few years since the 80s, were detected, and it just sort of a case of the farmers contacting a scientist and them having the time to do it and so on. So all of that has been the process before. And the other thing is that competitive government funding for science means that a wide variety of science competes for public good funding, and deeply applied fields like weed science may not get ranked highly.
Okay. So I guess, yeah, you've been lacking that collaborative approach and really effort from all parts of the supply chain, from the farmer to the scientist and herbicide companies. So what's the survey really looked at? Where was the data collected from, and what has been the aim of completing this work?
All right, so we are still doing the survey, and our aim is to determine the prevalence of herbicide resistance in arable farms. We've been randomly selecting wheat and barley farms and nearby fields of any other crop from the FAR list of members, and we've been aiming to select 20% of those farms.
Okay.
and visit them. And when we visit them, we look for weeds that survive all the treatments that happen, and they're still there just before harvest. And we collect seed from those weeds in January or so. And we've been working in mid-Canterbury between the Waimakariri and the Rakaia, and that was the first year. And then this year we were working near Timaru between Waitaki and the Rangitata River. we've been getting between 20 and 50% of resistance, of the farms have resistance to group A and B herbicides. So we're getting quite a lot of farms with resistance.
That is really high. So how do you know what resistance is going to be a real problem and what resistance is potentially less of a threat?
Well, in the case when we're collecting the seed, we can just test a variety of herbicides on the weeds that we collect.
Yep.
And the most common weeds that we're finding are ryegrass and oats that have resistance. But we've also had industry agronomists report on an ad hoc basis to us this year. And we got resistance in ryegrass to glyphosate, which is relatively rare. And we've also had chickweed resistance to flumethrin. So we're getting quite a lot of different cases coming up. Next summer, we're going to do Southland, so we'll see more.
Right, okay. So then, looking at all of those different cases of resistance, were you able to classify them in some way to determine, you know, which ones could potentially become a real problem?
This is more of a fact-finding expedition in the field work, but we did do a risk assessment to determine which weeds we should be keeping an eye out for, because we've kind of got our eye in on a couple of grass species that are really commonly known to be resistant. But there's a wider suite of weeds that could be resistant. So we did a risk assessment as a desktop exercise.
Right.
So the thing that we did is basically rank weeds by their reputation. In the world, there's a database, International Survey of Herbicide Resistant Weeds, which is available online for anyone. And it documents cases in the literature all around the world. And there's certain, so we basically rank weeds and herbicides in terms of their reputation for selecting for resistance in the case of the herbicides, or becoming resistant in the case of the weeds. A high risk score is given when a weed has many cases of resistance to multiple herbicide modes of action. So the herbicides have different kind of chemical families, and they act on certain enzymes in the plant, and
yep,
those are considered to be a mode of action.
So it's those combination of weeds that are likely to develop resistance and the modes of action, the herbicide groups that are potentially at risk of developing or being at higher risk of having weeds develop resistance to them.
Right, exactly. So the herbicides, I think it's important for everyone to realize how it works.
Yeah.
So basically, a herbicide is sprayed on a field, and if a plant by chance has a mutation that confers resistance to that herbicide, then that plant survives. So the herbicides are not causing the mutation. The mutations are happening naturally, and the herbicide just selects that plant.
Yep.
By virtue of not killing it, right? It survives. And so when that weed survives and produces more seed, so you get more seed of that under the selection pressure of the herbicide spraying regime. So it's really the herbicide is selecting for the resistant genes. Yeah.
And so then growers' practices can have a really big impact on how much resistance may or may not develop.
Yeah, that's true. So we identified ryegrass, barnyard grass, poa, fleabane, wild radish, perennial ryegrass, wavy leaf fleabane, wild oats, and summer grass as high-risk species. So if you need to keep an eye out for these high-risk species, and if they're surviving in your field, it could be that they're resistant, and you should send us plants.
Right.
In this case, the things that are known to help with herbicide resistance is spacing out different modes of action from year to year. So the longer that you can avoid using the same mode of action, the less likely you are to select for resistance. And mixing herbicides is considered to be a good strategy because it's very unlikely to have a mutation for resistance in any given case. But it's even more unlikely to have two mutations for two different modes of action in the same plant. So one herbicide will kill it where the other one might not have. So that mixing strategy is known to help reduce weed resistance.
Right. And so just going back to that desktop exercise of assessing the risk for resistance cases, I believe 8 out of 10 of those species that you were looking at as the highest risk were all grass species. Why is that?
It's a little bit of a mystery. I think that the obvious answer is they must be very abundant weeds in the field, so you have more chance to select for the rare mutation because there's so many of them.
Yeah.
That would be the simplest explanation, but I don't have the weed seed bank data, so I'm not completely sure of that. The other thing is that there's a possibility that genomic traits in grasses may mean they have a higher intrinsic rate of recombination and mutation. And that's to do with the GC content in the DNA, which is a little detail that the grasses have a much higher GC content, which is correlated with higher rates of mutation and recombination.
Right. So they're able to, because they're mutating more, there's a greater chance that resistance becomes one of those mutations.
Yes.
Right. So aside from resistance risk, some weeds are more widespread in New Zealand than others. As you mentioned, grasses are probably more abundant than maybe other broadleaf types. Can you give some examples of those high-risk weeds that really might pose a real problem to crops when combined with their resistance risk?
Mm-hmm. Well, in the arable sector, it's ryegrass, wild oats, chickweed are the known cases of resistance so far. And sow thistle and brome are a common weed, so they could be high risk. That's the answer for arable, but there's been 14 species of weeds in New Zealand that have developed resistance, and other sectors like thistles have developed resistance in pasture scenarios in New Zealand.
Right, so those weeds could also become a problem, but at the moment in arable, they're not a big problem. Glyphosate and diflunican were actives that had the most common amount of applications to barley and wheat crops. So what other insights were you able to deduce from using production-wise data in this desktop exercise of herbicide resistance risk?
We were able to get information about the herbicides that are applied to wheat and barley fields from the production-wise platform. And that is just useful to put into context which herbicides are we're applying the most and what we should look for in terms of resistance, because there's known relationships between a given herbicide and a suite of weeds. And so that just gives context for the risk assessment. Good record keeping is basically what that platform provides.
Mm-hmm.
And that could allow a farmer to easily track what herbicides and mode of action they're using from year to year and make good choices in subsequent years using a herbicide less frequently, using mixes. And there's certain pre-emergent herbicides that are known to really be effective in combination with other post-emergent herbicides. So you could easily set up that platform to make recommendations based on the history of herbicide use in the past. You could just say, you haven't used X and Y herbicide for 2 years. Try those, you know.
Mm.
So that kind of platform could easily be set up to do that. And then another thing that it could be used for is just tracking the crop rotations and considering that, because you could choose to space out your crops of a certain kind from year to year to also mitigate the risk, because you can use different mixes of herbicides depending on the crop.
Right. So that good record keeping is really the key to being able to understand what your risk factors are and how you can potentially mitigate the risk of herbicide resistance developing.
That's right. I think it's a really excellent way to do that. And it's also useful because the seed from a herbicide resistant plant can stay in the seed bank for years. So it might help you better understand where this came from, you might finally observe the problem 3 or 4 years later, and it might not really make sense unless you know all the crops and all the herbicides you've applied in the past.
Right, so you can sort of investigate by looking back at those records.
Right. Evidence-based decision-making, that's what we always hope for with science.
Yep. So using this data from production-wise and going forward with the survey, have you adjusted things that you're looking for? Have you opened your eyes to different species to be surveying or anything that's changing?
Well, for example, there's some C4 grasses that are relatively rare in wheat and barley that we included. They're considered to be spreading more in the South Island, maybe because of global warming or something like that. But they're spreading more in wheat and barley, and they could become a problem. They're really bad overseas. Mostly, we haven't done all the next steps. And some of the next steps include, when we do detect resistance, testing all the possible modes of action to see what works best. We're looking for the highest risk herbicides and just asking the question, is there resistance? But we could start looking more and more into how to control those weeds that are resistant.
Right, so then potentially being able to reduce the number of resistant weeds in the seed bank and on farms.
Yes, and there's a whole lot of other strategies for weed control that have nothing to do with herbicides, including stale seed beds, just tilling from time to time. There's a big benefit in no-till operations in terms of off-site impacts, but you know, from time to time, it could be useful to do tilling just to deal with the seed bank. You can actually cause the seed bank to germinate more prolifically and then kill those weeds that come up, so you can reduce the seed bank that way. There's a bunch of strategies that a lot of the farmers out there are aware of, and they could try some of those non-herbicide methods as well.
Great. So where can we keep up with your research? Where can we find out when you're finding more cases of resistance on farms as the survey goes on?
Most of our results are communicated through FAR, and they have regular reporting. Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much for your time, Chris. It's been great to learn more about your work in finding herbicide resistance on farms and what implications the results have for New Zealand growers and farmers.
Yeah, thank you very much. Glad to help.
The Landwise Promoting Sustainable Crop Production podcast series was brought to you by our sponsors. We appreciate the generous support from BASF, Hawke's Bay Regional Council, Vegetables New Zealand, and Processed Vegetables New Zealand.
This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Kidnappers, a community access media station. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.